Chapter 5. Entirely irrelevant answers? I blushed and explained that I had been a little absent-minded. At the end of another half hour she said, "Please, why do you grin so steadfastly at vacancy, and yet look so sad?" I explained that I always did that when I was reflecting. An hour passed, and then she turned and contemplated me with her earnest eyes and said, "Why do you cry all the time?" I explained that very funny comedies always made me cry. At last human nature surrendered, and I secretly slipped my boots off. This was a mistake. I was not able to get them on anymore. It was a rainy night, there were no omnibuses going our way, and as I walked home, burning up with shame, with the girl on one arm, and my boots under the other, I was an object worthy of some compassion, especially in those moments of martyrdom, when I had to pass through the glare that fell upon the pavement from street lamps. Finally, this child of the forest said, "Where are your boots?" And being taken unprepared, I put a fitting finish to the follies of the evening with the stupid remark, "The higher classes do not wear them to the theater." The Reverend had been an army chaplain during the war, and while we were hunting for a road that would lead to Hamilton, he told a story about two dying soldiers which interested me in spite of my feet. He said that in the PMAC hospitals rough pine coffins were furnished by government, but that it was not always possible to keep up with the demand. So, when a man died, if there was no coffin at hand he was buried without one. One night, late two soldiers lay dying in a ward. A man came in with a coffin on his shoulder, and stood trying to make up his mind which of these two poor fellows would be likely to need it first. Both of them begged for it with their fading eyes, they were past talking. Then one of them protruded a wasted hand from his blankets, and made a feeble beckoning sign with the fingers, to signify, "Be a good fellow, put it under my bed please." The man did it, and left. The lucky soldier painfully turned himself in his bed until he faced the other warrior, raised himself partly on his elbow, and began to work up a mysterious expression of some kind in his face. Gradually, irksomely, but surely and steadily, it developed, and at last it took definite form as a pretty successful wink. The sufferer fell back exhausted with his labor, but bathed in glory. Now entered a personal friend of number 2, the despoiled soldier. Number 2 pleaded with him with eloquent eyes, till presently he understood, and removed the coffin from under number 1's bed, and put it under No. 2's. Number 2 indicated his joy, and made some more signs. The friend understood again, and put his arm under number 2's shoulders, and lifted him partly up. Then the dying hero turned the dim exultation of his eye upon number 1, and began a slow and labored work with his hands. Gradually he lifted one hand up toward his face. It grew weak, and dropped back again. Once more he made the effort, but failed again. He took a rest. He gathered all the remnant of his strength, and this time he slowly but surely carried his thumb to the side of his nose, spread the gaunt fingers wide in triumph, and dropped back dead. That picture sticks by me yet. The situation is unique. The next morning, at what seemed a very early hour, the little white table waiter appeared suddenly in my room, and shot a single word out of himself, "Breakfast." This was a remarkable boy in many ways. He was about 11 years old. He had alert, intent black eyes. He was quick of movement. There was no hesitation, no uncertainty about him anywhere. There was a military decision in his lip, his manner, his speech, that was an astonishing thing, to see in a little chap like him. He wasted no words. His answers always came so quick and brief that they seemed to be part of the question that had been asked instead of a reply to it. When he stood at table with his fly brush, rigid, erect, his face set in a cast-iron gravity, he was a statue till he detected a dawning want in somebody's eye. Then he pounced down, supplied it, and was instantly a statue again. When he was sent to the kitchen for anything, he marched upright till he got to the door. He turned handsprings the rest of the way. Breakfast. I thought I would make one more effort, to get some conversation out of this being. Have you called the Reverend, or R, ESS apostrophe R? Is it early, or is 8:05? Do you have to do all the chores, apostrophe, or is there somebody to give you a colored girl? Is there only one parish in this island, or are there 8? Is the big church on the hill a parish church, or is it Chapel of Ease? Is taxation here classified into pole, parish, town, and don't know? Before I could cudgel another question out of my head, he was below, hand springing across the backyard. He had slid down the balusters, head first. I gave up trying to provoke a discussion with him. The essential element of discussion had been left out of him. His answers were so final and exact that they did not leave a doubt to hang conversation on. I suspect that there is the making of a mighty man, or a mighty rascal in this boy according to circumstances, but they are going to apprentice him to a carpenter. It is the way the world uses its opportunities. During this day and the next we took carriage drives about the island, and over to the town of St. George's, 15 or 20 miles away. Such hard excellent roads to drive over are not to be found elsewhere out of Europe. An intelligent young colored man drove us, and acted as guide-book. In the edge of the town we saw 5 or 6 mountain cabbage palms, atrocious name, standing in a straight row, and equidistant from each other. These were not the largest, or the tallest trees I have ever seen, but they were the stateliest, the most majestic. That row of them must be the nearest that nature has ever come to counterfeiting a colonnade. These trees are all the same height, say 60 feet, the trunks as gray as granite, with a very gradual and perfect taper, without sign of branch, or knot or flaw, the surface not looking like bark, but like granite that has been dressed and not polished. Thus all the way up the diminishing shaft for 50 feet, then it begins to take the appearance of being closely wrapped, spool fashion, with gray cord, or of having been turned in a lathe. Above this point there is an outward swell, and thence upward for 6 feet or more the cylinder is a bright, fresh green, and is formed of wrappings like those of an ear of green Indian corn. Then comes the great, spraying palm plume, also green. Other palm trees always lean out of the perpendicular, or have a curve in them. But the plumb line could not detect a deflection in any individual of this stately row. They stand as straight as the colonnade of Baalbek, they have its great height, they have its gracefulness, they have its dignity. In moonlight or twilight, and shorn of their plumes, they would duplicate it. The birds we came across in the country were singularly tame. Even that wild creature, the quail, would pick around in the grass at ease, while we inspected it and talked about it at leisure. A small bird of the canary species had to be stirred up with the butt end of the whip before it would move, and then it moved only a couple of feet. It is said that even the suspicious flea is tame and sociable in Bermuda, and will allow himself to be caught and caressed without misgivings. This should be taken with allowance, for doubtless there is more or less brag about it. In San Francisco they used to claim that their native flea could kick a child over, as if it were a merit in a flea to be able to do that, as if the knowledge of it trumpeted a broad ought to entice immigration. Such a thing in 9 cases out of 10 would be almost sure to deter a thinking man from coming. We saw no bugs or reptiles to speak of, and so I was thinking of saying in print, in a general way, that there were none at all. But one night, after I had gone to bed, the Reverend came into my room carrying something, and asked, "Is this your boot?" I said it was, and he said he had met a spider going off with it. Next morning he stated that just at dawn the same spider raised his window, and was coming in to get a shirt, but saw him and fled. I inquired, "Did he get the shirt?" "No." "How did you know it was a shirt he was after?" "I could see it in his eye." We inquired around, but could hear of no Bermudian spider capable of doing these things. Citizens said that their largest spiders could not more than spread their legs over an ordinary saucer, and that they had always been considered honest. here was testimony of a clergyman against the testimony of mere worldlings, interested ones too. On the whole, I judged it best to lock up my things. Here and there on the country roads we found lemon, papaw, orange, lime, and fig trees, also several sorts of palms, among them the cocoa, the date, and the palmetto. We saw some bamboos 40 feet high, with stems as thick as a man's arm. Jungles of the mangrove tree stood up out of swamps, propped on their interlacing roots, as upon a tangle of stilts. In drier places the noble tamarind sent down its grateful cloud of shade. Here and there the blossomy tamarisk adorned the roadside. There was a curious gnarled and twisted black tree, without a single leaf on it. It might have passed itself off for a dead apple tree, but for the fact that it had a star-like, red-hot flower sprinkled sparsely over its person. It had the scattery red glow that a constellation might have when glimpsed through smoked glass. It is possible that our constellations have been so constructed as to be invisible through smoked glass. If this is so, it is a great mistake. We saw a tree that bears grapes, and just as calmly and unostentatiously as a vine would do it. We saw an India rubber tree, but out of season, possibly, so there were no shoes on it, nor suspenders, nor anything that a person would properly expect to find there. This gave it an impressively fraudulent look. There was exactly one mahogany tree on the island. I know this to be reliable, because I saw a man who said he had counted it many a time, and could not be mistaken. He was a man with a hare lip and a pure heart, and everybody said he was as true as steel. Such men are all too few. Once I caught near and far the pink cloud of the yolander, and the red blaze of the pomegranate blossom. In one piece of wild wood the morning dash glory vines had wrapped the trees to their very tops, and decorated them all over with couples, and clusters of great bluebells, a fine and striking spectacle, at a little distance. But the dull cedar is everywhere, and is the prevailing foliage. One does not appreciate how dull it is until the varnished, bright green attire of the infrequent lemon tree pleasantly intrudes its contrast. And one thing Bermuda is eminently tropical was in May, at least the unbrilliant, slightly faded, unrejoicing look of the landscape. For forests arrayed in a blemishless magnificence of glowing green foliage, that seems to exult in its own existence, and can move the beholder to an enthusiasm that will make him either shout or cry, one must go to countries that have malignant winters. We saw scores of colored farmers digging their crops of potatoes and onions, their wives and children helping entirely contented and comfortable, if looks go for anything. We never met a man, or woman, or child anywhere in this sunny island who seemed to be unprosperous, or discontented, or sorry about anything. This sort of monotony became very tiresome presently, and even something worse. The spectacle of an entire nation groveling in contentment is an infuriating thing. We felt the lack of something in this community, a vague, an indefinable, an elusive something, and yet a lack. But after considerable thought we made out what it was, tramps. Let them go there, right now, in a body. It is utterly virgin soil. Passage is cheap. Every true patriot in America will help buy tickets. Whole armies of these excellent beings can be spared from our midst and our poles. They will find a delicious climate and a green, kind-hearted people. There are potatoes and onions for all, and a generous welcome for the first batch that arrives, and elegant graves for the second. It was the early rose potato the people were digging. Later in the year they have another crop, which they call the garnet. We buy their potatoes retail at $15 a barrel, and those colored farmers buy ours for a song, and live on them. Havana might exchange cigars with Connecticut in the same advantageous way, if she thought of it. We passed a roadside grocery with a sign up, Piatos Wanted. An ignorant stranger, doubtless. He could not have gone 30 steps from his place without finding plenty of them. In several fields the arrowroot crop was already sprouting. Bermuda used to make a vast annual profit out of this staple before firearms came into such general use. The island is not large. Somewhere in the interior, a man ahead of us had a very slow horse. I suggested that we had better go by him, but the driver said the man had but a little way to go. I waited to see, wondering how he could know. Presently the man did turn down another road. I asked, "How did you know he would?" "Because I knew the man, and where he lived." I asked him, satirically, if he knew everybody in the island. He answered, very simply, that he did. This gives a body's mind a good substantial grip on the dimensions of the place. At the principal hotel at St. George's, a young girl, with a sweet, serious face, said we could not be furnished with dinner, because we had not been expected, and no preparation had been made. Yet it was still an hour before dinner time. We argued, she yielded not. We supplicated, she was serene. The hotel had not been expecting an inundation of two people, and so it seemed that we should have to go home dinnerless. I said we were not very hungry, a fish would do. My little maid answered, it was not the market day for fish. Things began to look serious, but presently the boarder who sustained the hotel came in, and when the case was laid before him, he was cheerfully willing to divide. So we had much pleasant chat at table about St. George's chief industry, the repairing of damaged ships. And in between we had a soup that had something in it that seemed to taste like the hereafter, but it proved to be only pepper of a particularly vivacious kind. And we had an iron-clad chicken that was deliciously cooked, but not in the right way. Baking was not the thing to convince this sort. He ought to have been put through a quartz dash mill until the uck was taken out of him, and then boiled till we came again. We got a good deal of sport out of him, but not enough sustenance to leave the victory on our side. No matter, we had potatoes and a pie and a sociable good time. Then a ramble through the town, which is a quaint one, with interesting, crooked streets, and narrow, crooked lanes, with here and there a grain of dust. Here, as in Hamilton, the dwellings had Venetian blinds of a very sensible pattern. They were not double shutters, hinged at the sides, but a single broad shutter, hinged at the top. You push it outward, from the bottom, and fasten it at any angle required by the sun or desired by yourself. All about the island one sees great white scars on the hill slopes. These are dished spaces, where the soil has been scraped off, and the coral exposed and glazed with hard whitewash. Some of these are a quarter acre in size. They catch and carry the rainfall to reservoirs, for the wells are few and poor, and there are no natural springs and no brooks. They say that the Bermuda climate is mild and equable, with never any snow or ice, and that one may be very comfortable in spring clothing the year round. There, we had delightful and decided summer weather in May, with a flaming sun that permitted the thinnest of raiment, and yet there was a constant breeze. Consequently, we were never discomforted by heat. At 4 or 5 in the afternoon, the mercury began to go down, and then it became necessary to change to thick garments. I went to St. George's in the morning clothed in the thinnest of linen, and reached home at 5 in the afternoon with 2 overcoats on. The nights are said to be always cool and bracing. We had mosquito nets, and the Reverend said the mosquitoes persecuted him a good deal. I often heard him slapping and banging at these imaginary creatures with as much zeal as if they had been real. There are no mosquitoes in the Bermudas in May. The poet Thomas More spent several months in Bermuda more than 70. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.